Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
A hat trick for number 8. His 25th career 3-goal game as some insurance for Washington makes it 5-2.
Alex Ovechkin is better than everybody else.
Confirmed.
Welcome in, Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. NHL goal-scoring leaders. David Pasternak's got 36. He's 23 years old. Auston Matthews has 34. He's 22 years old. Alex Ovechkin has 31. He's 34 years old. In fact, of the top five goal scorers in the National Hockey League right now, ages are 23, 22, 23, 24, and 34.
Which one of these is not like the other? Our guy.
Ovechkin just doesn't slow down. That was hat trick number 25 last night. We've gotten to a point now where there are so many Ovechkin hat tricks that people decide, do I really want to throw my hat on the ice?
I like this hat.
Last time I was here, I did this. I had to go buy another hat. It was $34. Do I want to lose another hat now? It's not, I would say it's not even that special, but we need to fight against getting comfortable in this town. We need to fight against just expecting this.
He reminds us. 5 goals in 2 games. And here's what I like best about it. A little bit of a revenge tour. Their worst game of the season a few days ago against New Jersey. How about a Hattie for number 8? Carolina beat them in the playoffs last year, right? They haven't played particularly well against Carolina. They had a couple losses against Carolina. I'll show up and score. Put both goals on the board, please, and thank you very much. Every night, it's a new greatest of all time caliber superstar that he's going to be passing. Up next, the second best player I've ever seen in my life, Mario Lemieux. Alex Ovechkin's about to pass Mario Lemieux. Say that sentence out loud.
Right.
Mario Lemieux,
and
man.
By the way, right after that, Mark Messier. The next three Yzerman's guys on there. The goals list, yeah. Including Yzerman, he's going to pass all of them in the next couple weeks. I mean, the question
is, well,
at this
rate, you know, when do they play next?
Right, exactly.
Tomorrow?
He could score 6 in his next game. But even if he slows down, by the end of this season, he'll be probably 6th on the all-time goals list. And we've been fortunate enough and lucky enough to watch him every step of the way, every game. So don't take it for granted.
Don't.
When you watch this guy, realize we are at a moment in time in this grand amount of years that everyone's going to get spinning on this rock, however long that goes. This is probably the greatest hockey player who's ever lived, certainly the greatest goal scorer, and we're getting to watch every single game. It really is a treat. And with that, welcome in. We're Grant and Danny, and you are locked in to 106.7 The Fan. It is a football Friday. We are presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. Some multitasking to be done today, Danny. We'll bounce back and forth between the National Football League and Championship Sunday, 2 days out, and also the fallout from the Astros sign-stealing saga, where Carlos Beltran yesterday resigned before ever managing a game with the Mets. So there are now 3 skippers who have lost their jobs over this situation, and we are less than a month away from pitchers and catchers reporting.
Oh, by the way.
27 days from now, teams are showing up for camp. And there are 3 teams without managers. Boston, Houston, and the New York Mets. The first 2 of them in the American League, legitimate contenders. The Mets may be less so, but not a bad team by any means.
The Mets are not going to be bad.
They could make the playoffs. So if you are Buck Showalter, certainly Dusty Baker, former Nats manager, you know, a proven veteran who's won before at the major league level, had strong regular seasons, a little bit of playoff success, you're in the running right now to be a manager of a pretty good team next year.
Yeah, Mets were 10 games over last year. They weren't slouches, okay? They were knocking on the door. You got Alonso. You've got that pitching staff. They need a little bit of a bullpen upgrade, which they did. That group could be really good, and they're managerless right now.
Which team, if you, let's say you're Dusty and you get to pick between the three, and I'm not sure that's the fairest thing to say because I would imagine Buck Showalter would have the pick of the litter. But
for sake of argument,
regardless, all three teams call you, they talk to your agent, and you get offers from all three. I think I'd most want to manage Houston,
right?
Even amid all the turmoil,
that's
just because they're the most talented.
You still get the best talent in the sport.
Next Boston and next the Mets. But the Mets job might actually be the easiest of the three, even though you're managing in the NL, which is more difficult because of the starting pitching.
No slouches in that group, by the way. These are three pretty good. I mean, two teams that – one team's excellent, one's very good, and one, I think, is on the cusp.
Which one is that? The Mets?
The Mets, yeah.
Yeah. The problem with the Mets, if you're managing them and trying to win a World Series in the next couple of years, number one, the lineup still isn't as good as it needs to be. The bullpen's a little bit of a problem. But you're in the NL East where – the Braves have won back-to-back division titles and aren't going away. The Nats are the defending World Series champions. Those two teams are legitimate contenders.
Yeah.
Pretty much every single year.
Mm-hmm.
And the Phillies, after having the best offseason of any team a year ago, made a big step forward. Now everyone pretended like they were a disappointment last year. I don't know why. They shouldn't have made the playoffs with that team. They needed pitching. They added a little bit of it. Speaking of the Mets, with one of the starters from New York coming over with Zach Wheeler. But that's a four-club division, four contenders. You can't say that about pretty much any other division in baseball. So I might try to steer clear of the East for right now. If I can go to Boston or I can go to Houston, more talented teams that have won more recently, I'd probably do that.
I think you're right about that.
It would be cool, though, to see Dusty get a job because otherwise he's basically been out of luck. And it doesn't. He's not getting calls. He's not getting interviews. But this is the perfect situation for a guy like that.
Mm-hmm.
You get immensely qualified candidate coming in for an interview, number one. Number two, imagine the PR you get. I mean, every national writer in the country
is going to congratulate you every day.
Wants to have dinner with Dusty Baker. I saw our buddy Adam Kilgore tweeted yesterday, if Dusty doesn't get a job, we riot. Like, media people love this guy. They just love him. And it's not that different for Buck Showalter, by the way. So if you make one of those hires, it kind of spins the narrative pretty quickly, turns it on its head. You go from everyone crushing you to you got this culture changer to come in here and be a sheriff and clean up your act.
And it's interesting that, I mean, this is not, yeah, with Buck, it would be that way. But with Dusty, this is not the hardcore, you know, sort of silhouetted guy in the corner spitting tobacco on the ground who's the ultimate disciplinarian. You know, like he's the most people person guy ever.
Right.
But, and that's what you need at this point where some of this bad PR is happening, right?
We're 2 days away from the AFC and NFC title games. Here's where we're going to start on Grant and Danny with you guys. So the two matchups on Sunday are slated for 3:05 and 6:40 kickoffs. Titans Chiefs from Arrowhead Stadium in the 3 o'clock hour. And then just before 7 o'clock D.C. time at Levi Stadium in San Francisco, the Packers and 49ers will put the ball in the air. You got two 13-3 teams, a 12-4 club, and a little engine who could left. The 9-7 Titans who have destroyed the Patriots and the Ravens' dreams in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, by the way, right?
And it doesn't look like anyone's going to be able to stop Derrick Henry. You might beat them, but I don't know if you're going to stop Henry in the process. You know my favorite hypothetical we do every year this time.
Mm-hmm.
You get to watch one. Now, I know that if you're like me and you're like Danny, you're going to watch both.
You'll watch both.
And I understand that you'll just carve out your day, and it's going to be probably 7 to 7.5 hours of being on the couch, you and football games. Understood. But in my little hypothetical world, Danny, you got a list of 7 items to do. You got to knock them off one by one, including going up on your roof and taking down some Christmas lights.
Gotta do some stuff, yeah.
Including running around the house and putting away the tree. A bunch of things. You get 3.5 hours for you to watch one of these two games on Sunday. Are you choosing Titans Chiefs to see who represents the AFC in the Super Bowl? Or are you watching Packers 49ers so that you can watch Green Bay or San Francisco punch their ticket to the big game?
This might surprise you, but it's Green Bay San Fran for me. Popular, I think conventional wisdom is going to say Kansas City, I want the offensive laser light show and the unstoppable force that is Derrick Henry. I think that's what most people would probably say. I'm an NFC guy, so that tilts me a little bit that way in general because the Redskins are in the NFC. I've always cared more about the NFC than the AFC. I grew up in the era where the AFC lost a million straight Super Bowls and was the inferior conference, and it wasn't close. But give me Aaron Rodgers, maybe one of his final few rides. It's hard to get to where they are right now without Aaron Rodgers being the maestro, the superhero, the perfect quarterback. He's still capable of it, like that Toby Keith song, once or twice, but not for an entire campaign, it seems, anymore. And they're content to run the ball, play with a good defensive line. The San Francisco team is complete. They are everything. They've got all the different things. How would you like to lose to us today? We'll run it down your throat. We'll beat you with turnovers. And if we got in the back pocket, you may not be convinced of this. I think they could win a game where Jimmy Garoppolo goes nuts and throws it up and down the field like they did at New Orleans this year, one of the best football games of the season.
His biggest game, his biggest win of the year, probably.
I like that game so much. Aaron Rodgers against the best defense remaining in the sport.
I'm an NFC guy as well, and I take the other game. My main argument is I think the best player remaining in the playoffs right now is Pat Mahomes. Must-see television, got to watch Pat Mahomes. The second best player remaining in the playoffs right now, maybe not in football, but right now, this moment, based on how everyone's playing, is Derrick Henry, also in that game. And this storyline of can you stop this guy, you know it's coming. Everybody knows they're calling his number. He's about to get 27 carries, and no one's been able to do anything about it. I love that. It reminds me of Friday night high school football, where there's just a dude who's bigger and badder, and you got a bunch of dudes like me trying to tackle this freight train, and no one can do it.
He's Mariano Rivera's cutter. You know it's coming. Good luck.
So I'll go AFC Championship game. I got a couple more reasons why, but we'll take some calls on this next. Which game do you watch if you only get one? And tell us your reasoning at 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067 is the number. You can tweet us at Grant H. Paulson. At Funny Danny. We are underway on the Fan.
It's always a chess match with him, and you gotta pick your spot carefully.
Richard Sherman getting ready for 49ers-Packers in the NFC Championship game. He's played Aaron Rodgers a time or two. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. You get to watch one of these two games. Which do you choose? 800-636-1067 is the number. We'll take your calls in a moment. Having watch that Chiefs-Titans game back. My favorite thing to do is go on the NFL Game Pass and to watch the condensed versions of games. You could do it in like a half hour, basically.
That is awesome.
It just goes clip to clip with the plays. There's none of the in-between stuff. And basically, an NFL game boiled down to just the action is like 35 minutes.
I know.
So I rewatched that 35-32 win for the Titans over the Chiefs. And Kansas City's offense was excellent, and Pat Mahomes was splendid. He threw for 440 and 3 in the game. But they couldn't stop Derrick Henry. And that makes this really my number one storyline. I don't think the Chiefs can stop him. I don't know how they will. He went for a 188 and a pair of touchdowns on 23 attempts. I mean, this was a really good running back at Oklahoma playing against, like, Oklahoma State line, where he averaged 8.2 yards per carry. I think Derrick Henry is going to put up his. I just don't think that necessarily means the Titans are going to win the game. But the idea of the Chiefs offense, which is the best big play unit in the league, throwing the ball around and Mahomes being great on one side of the ball. And then when the other team has the ball, Henry against the world, I got something at all times in this game.
Mm-hmm.
I love this juxtaposition of these two very polar opposite clubs built in really different ways. Give me the AFC Championship.
I don't hate it. I mean, to me, the intrigue is Henry gets his, but if you don't let Tannehill throw a couple long touchdown passes, you beat the brains out of Tennessee. You kill them because they're only going to get 13, 14 points. You don't score by just handing the ball off and running it. You keep the ball, and that's all well and good. And can Tennessee's defense, with Dean Pease coordinating it, continue to do what they've done here on this little run that they've gone on, which is stop offenses, including the high-powered Baltimore Ravens offense, by the way, like we haven't seen anybody do all season long. This is a different animal. This is Kansas City's offense. This is you got a counter, we got a counter for your counter, and we counter the counter with a different counter. We got everything under the sun. We can beat you a million different ways. And, oh, by the way, our quarterback's a magician. Good luck with that. NFC side, this is a worse version, Green Bay, going up against the better version of themselves, right? You look in the mirror and you see the Matrix version of yourself with, like, the cool trench coat and the nice sunglasses. Green Bay's got some warts. San Francisco doesn't have those same warts to me. Maybe they're missing a Davante Adams, their minus one superstar receiver playmaker. But I think you make up for that with George Kittle. I think you make up for that with how brilliant Kyle Shanahan is at scheming guys open and countering what you want to do on defense.
I actually think it's a benefit to them that they don't have the one dominant receiver because they spread the ball around
so
much.
They do spread it.
So I don't look at that as any kind of a wart or blemish or detriment.
I'm not saying it's a blemish either. I'm saying if you're looking at these two teams.
Just weaponry? That,
yeah, just the way San Francisco's designed. To me, they are so complete.
Well, what's the 49er flaw? I know that the Titans, if they fall behind, are screwed because they're not going to be able to throw it on obvious passing downs. The Chiefs' defense, which has been really good lately, but they're not going to stop Derrick Henry. That is a concern. You just mentioned that Green Bay is just kind of a little bit limited with its firepower. They have not been on the same level this year slinging the ball around as they used to be. They're very, very balanced. I don't know what San Francisco's flaw is. I guess maybe it'd be the quarterback position. I mean, everyone wants to anoint Jimmy Garoppolo and talk about how good he is. He's very solid. We talk about Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins is a good player. A lot of things need to go right around those types of guys. Jimmy Garoppolo is not a put you on his back and go win you a football game type. I mean, he's quote-unquote 1-0 in the playoffs if we're doing quarterback wins. Look at the way they won that game as a team last week. They ran the ball on 30 of the final 36 snaps. Now, they came out throwing it, to his credit, but he threw a bad pick, had another pick dropped. I could pretty easily see him keeping both teams in the game. Let's go to Dennis in Fredericksburg on the Fan. Dennis, which game will be better this weekend?
The Titans game.
How come?
Well, because, I mean, I don't, you know, and I'm gonna be brutally honest, I'm a Patriots fan, have been since 1972. But the fact of the matter is Derrick Henry's going to get his yards. There's no doubt about it. What can lead the Titans to victory is how fast the Titans score. If Derrick Henry gets his yards and he's breaking off 20 and 26-yard runs and they're scoring in 3 and 4 minutes, then you're just going to put Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense on the field too quick. We saw what they did last week. Two plays, three plays, three plays. They had 21 points in 5 minutes. You have got to keep Kansas City on the sidelines. And like you said, Kansas City's run defense is not all that great. Grant's is dead on. But if the Titans score too fast, it's going to be doom for them because we know how fast Kansas City can score.
And this is why I think the Titans match up well with the Chiefs and not coincidentally have beaten them the last two times they played them.
Mm-hmm.
With the iteration of the Chiefs as we know it now, that they're 0-2 against this team recently, it's because they don't score fast. They don't really have that club in the bag.
Right.
They're not going to do that. A.J. Brown, who's their best weapon vertically and their speediest receiver and their scariest option in the passing game, has almost done nothing through two playoff games. And I'm not blaming him for that.
Just game script. It's how it's
exactly.
Going.
It just, there's been no opportunities. Look at the Titans' losses this year. Henry went for 82, 44, 78, 28, 63, 86, and didn't play in their 7 losses. In their wins, 84, 100, 90, 75, and then here's where he got on his roll, and they went 6-2 down the stretch. 188, 159, 149, 103, 211, 182, 195.
You see a theme there. Really huge numbers.
Game that's going to be better. Fred and Suitland, what do you think? Fred, you're on the Fan. Go ahead.
Oh, Fred.
Let's go to Chase in Bethesda on G&D. Chase, you get to choose one. Which one will be better?
Hey, guys. I think the Titans-Chiefs game is definitely the better one because of the modern era and the two takes on different styles of football and ways to win. You know, and the guy I feel most sorry for is Mariota, right? Like, here Tannehill's basically just a little bit better than what he's been doing. And, you know, you got Derrick Henry doing ungodly things.
Yeah, I don't feel bad for Mariota, I'll be completely honest with you. It's, I guess in a way, it's disappointing to not see him out there. But I've thought Marcus Mariota was a fairly inept quarterback for a bunch of years and got a pass. I mean, early on in his career, he went number 2 overall.
He's drafted high. People just kept...
And he just got shots, right? And he put up okay numbers. Like, if you go back, 19 touchdowns, 10 picks as a rookie. He had a 26 touchdown, 9 pick sophomore year. But his yards per attempt were normally in the low 7s. He was normally putting up around 32 to 3,400 passing yards a season. He was very much successful based on their offense, not necessarily based on him. So as soon as they went to Ryan Tannehill, everything changed. And I think that that is a direct correlation to Marcus Mariota. Yeah,
the offensive line, I think, started playing. I mean, remember, there was a game against Jacksonville. I think they gave up 10 sacks early in the season. Think about how different the season was then. Jacksonville's defense was still good. Tennessee's offensive line was a disaster. I think Tannehill took over full-time as a starter. I can't remember which one it was specifically, but everything just sort of changed, right? The protection somehow got better. Guys got healthier. Guys like Roger Saffold started playing better. Everything about them transformed when Tannehill got there. It's not coincidence, right, that just the whole offense, the whole system is better with that guy. So I'm with you. I don't necessarily feel for Mariota. You sort of had your shot, dude. You know what I mean? You were anointed. You got the benefit of the doubt for a long time. Enjoy being somebody's backup.
I feel for guys like Jalen Hurts at Alabama. You know, when you were really good and really helpful, and then the next guy was just a little bit better.
You had a bad half, and now everybody doesn't want to see you again.
You had your time.
That's right.
We know what it looks like with you, and we know what it looks like with Tannehill. And Tannehill's been the key to unlocking this whole thing for them. Without having to do a whole lot, albeit, but he makes a couple plays here and there with his feet, like Mariota did. He's a little bit more accurate passer, and he makes a couple plays down the field, it seems like, every week, which is what the Chiefs need to try to take away. Grant and Danny on the Fan next. Let's pivot to the Astros in Major League Baseball. The fallout continuing. Another manager loses his job, and we got brand new theories on just how deep this cheating scandal was going, where maybe you're wearing something that's buzzing your shoulder when a pitch is coming. Do we really buy all these conspiracy theories? We'll get into it next on the Fan.
We part ways with Carlos. This was not an easy decision for us. It was not an easy decision for Carlos.
Brody Van Wagenen, the general manager of the Mets, Carlos Beltran, their first-year manager, although I guess it's more like zero-year manager.
I was going to say, how many years did he get?
Just hired and now steps down, never managed in a game. Beltran was one of the few names implicated in the Astros sign-stealing situation in Houston in 2017. He played there at that time, end of his career. And in fact, one of the things that's come out is that Alex Cora and Beltran kind of worked together to devise this system because he was struggling and they wanted to help him a little bit. So he benefited pretty substantially from it. Cora went on not only to win the World Series that year, but to get a managing job out of the success of the Astros, win the World Series as a manager next year. He's already stepped down and slash been fired by the Boston Red Sox. So Beltran, who just got his first post-playing job as a skipper of the Mets, steps down, and that's three managers out of their jobs because A.J. Hinch of the Astros was first.
Yep, three managers and a GM.
And we're just getting started, I think.
Uh-huh.
Now, as far as the firings of managers and GMs, this is probably the end of the road. Four is where we're going to be. But I think there's a lot more to this, and it just depends on how far down this rabbit hole Major League Baseball wants to go. You know my take on this. I think there's a lot of other teams doing shady things.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're kind of looking at the Astros, but you won't notice that they're going to be screaming real loudly or throwing stones because there's a lot of things being hidden. But where we want to go with this, Danny, is yesterday we're now in tinfoil hat-wearing conspiracy theory territory, where people that are not directly involved in the game but who are related to people who are involved to the game, allegedly, are tweeting and taking to social media to out other players and other people in baseball. So we had, originally, we thought this was the niece, correct, of Carlos Beltran?
Yeah, this was the alleged niece. And no one could prove it, I guess?
It turned out that supposedly she is not his niece. All these tweets have been deleted. But she came out and basically said, listen, I know a lot of things. I got pictures for rainy days. Wait, what? What pictures do you have? What are you talking about? She alleged that Astros players wear some type of device inside their shoulder with a wire that would basically buzz to let them know, like they were doing with the trash cans, so that there wasn't an audible noise and it wasn't as obvious which pitches were coming. To which point, you and I watched that documentary, Don't Bleep with Cats. This reminded me of that.
It does, right?
Where the Twitter patrol and people all over the country who have a lot of time on their hands start investigating this, and who knows what's real and what isn't, but there are now videos of right after Jose Altuve in Game 6 of the League Championship Series steps on home plate. When, was that a Game 7?
That was Game 7. It's a walk-off homer against Chapman.
It was the walk-off home run that ended the series. He hit the homer off Chapman. He gets back to home plate, and he's basically begging his teammates, don't rip my jersey off, trying to hold his jersey, like, don't rip it off, don't rip it off. Well, maybe you just don't want your jersey ruined. Who knows? It could be as simple as he wants to donate it to charity and doesn't want it torn apart. But regardless, he doesn't want his jersey ripped off. Why? If he doesn't have a wire under there, some people are saying. Then you get your championship T-shirts. All of his teammates out on the field just kind of take their jerseys off, put their shirts on. It's a euphoric moment. No one wants to leave. You want to stand out there as long as possible. I was on the field when the Nats were celebrating. They're crying. They're hugging. Ryan Zimmerman's yelling. I mean, no one's leaving that field. Well, as soon as they won the ALCS, Jose Altuve goes down the steps into the clubhouse where no one can see him and puts his T-shirt on and comes back out. Very, very odd.
Very peculiar. There are zoom-in pictures of as he's coming down from third base towards home plate, telling teammates, don't rip my shirt off. He's saying, mi camisa, no, meaning like, you know, my shirt, no, like don't touch it. There's an unnatural bump on his sort of right shoulder that does not look like what your body looks like. His left shoulder looks normal. Right shoulder does not. Is it just a weird angle because he's tugging on a shirt, or is there a device in there? Here's what I will say about this. And this is, you know, one of these things that MLB, I guess, alleged to have, or not alleged, said they investigated it, couldn't find any evidence to substantiate it. There's a picture of Josh Reddick, wearing like undershirt stuff, and there's a piece
so that
of
one's
tape
interesting.
That looks like it.
Yeah, Reddick is doing the interview on, I presume, FS1 after the ALCS win. And I remember watching this, by the way.
Yeah, I watched the interview.
And he is shirtless for the most part. He might have like some kind of undershirt that's cut. I don't know. But you can see. Do you have the picture in front
of you? Yeah, he's got a tank top on.
Okay. So he's got a tight tank top. But what you can see is basically what looks to be like a piece of white tape. And it does seem like there's a wire of some type.
Part of that could be optical illusion from the tattoo that it's covering. But it looks like something is taped to him. That's what it looks like.
He clearly has tape on him. Now I saw someone else send something and said, look, it's just the tape from his like his thumb or from the bat or something like that.
His wife called it confetti.
Why?
Well, Danny Ruye calls it BS.
Yeah. When you put tape on your chest, like let's say it is the tape that was on his bat or on his thumb or whatever. I don't know why you would stick that to your chest. That seems like a weird thing to do. His wife saying confetti, it doesn't look like confetti. But regardless, we can't say definitively what it is. It's just a lot of people lobbing these grenades now. But this is where we are. And this is kind of the shame of this whole thing is everything is speculative. And everybody assumes that everything is cheating. Everything is wrong. That they were doing these things. Maybe they weren't. Who knows? But it's like the steroid era.
Yes.
You find out that a few people were doing steroids, and now everything is suspicious.
Every opposite field home run, you're going, roids. Here's the thing. Whether you want to call it Pandora's box, whether you want to call it conspiracy theories with people letting their imaginations run wild, they're guilty of something. And as soon as that happened, as soon as we crossed that threshold from, it went from Yankee fans and the Yankees whining about losing. It went from a couple teams, sour grapes, hey, they got my signs that time. And, you know, everybody's sort of conspiracy theorizing at that point. It just sounds like sour grapes because the Astros are great. Now that they're guilty, now that people are getting fired, now that these things are substantiated, how can you possibly say, there's no way?
You can't.
How could you dismiss this?
But
they invited this, is my point.
I think we do have to say, at least as a show, the buzzer rumors are not supported by any actual evidence. I mean, there are videos, there are different things. People are kind of seeing what they want to. And you saw this with that, the don't bleep with cats. Everything can make a lot of sense when you piece it together from the result.
Sure.
Twitter kind of did what Twitter does, and they found the photos and the videos and the evidence that suggests the outcome that they want. Major League Baseball felt compelled by all the talk yesterday to come out and address this. Yeah. That's how big of a deal it was online. And they said they found no evidence of wearable devices during its investigation. But I'm with you. You can't rule this out. Why wouldn't they go this far? You're doing the trash can thing. That's just a low-tech version of this.
You got caught doing that, so you got to, okay, we need a way that people don't catch on. Because you hear banging on certain pitches, and you don't hit on others, people figure it out. I mean, you play in a high school baseball game. The catcher gets a little lazy with, not closing his right leg for the signs. The first base coach is going to go, come on, Grant, first name fastball. Come on, Paulson, second name off-speed pitch. They're doing that at that level.
Yeah.
And you don't want to give that away. You don't want to have that obvious of a tell. You think they wouldn't get more sophisticated with this because they're using technology? The idea that the door should be closed on this, I don't buy that.
No, I'm not closing any doors. it's just sad for me that we can't trust anything anymore. Like, we'll go back and look at all the home runs that are hit in the playoffs by the Astros, and we'll say, what is this in his jersey? It's like, oh, it's a wrinkle. Or is it? Or is it a wire?
Because I'm replaying the at-bat of when Altuve hits the home run off Chapman to win it. Chapman, who throws 106, snaps a slider off that's as nasty as anything you'll ever see. Altuve doesn't flinch. Doesn't make any kind of movement like he's going to react to it. Doesn't make any movement like I'm thinking about swinging. Stands there looking at it like that's a lovely painting in the Louvre. And then the next pitch, he hits a bolt. My point is, it may just be an incredibly transcendent player in a great moment doing something awesome. It could also be his cheating.
Well, it is crazy to me because you feel betrayed. You feel cheated. There's no doubt. But I remember standing next to Charlie and Dave with Bob Carpenter and you in the box in Houston for games 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the thing you and I just kept talking about and talking about and talking about. And if you go back and listen to any of our pregame shows, this team didn't ever swing at the stuff all year long that has got swings and misses from Scherzer and Strasburg. Scherzer was out of the game in like the fourth or fifth inning. He stayed until the fifth, but he was spent in the fourth. He's throwing 20-plus pitches because they're spitting on everything. It's like, and you and I kept saying, it's like they know what's coming. It's crazy. Well, they probably did.
They probably did.
That's why they never swung at his sliders in the dirt. That's why they never
did.
But and maybe they didn't. But we get to sit here and say this now because we don't know.
Or 1 through 9, they have the greatest collective batting eye in the history of mankind. A guy who wins Cy Young awards based on his ability to make balls look like strikes for 96% till you have to make a decision, and by then it's already too late. Every one of those guys is spitting on stuff that's that close every time. When did they chase in games 1 and 2? When?
Did
anybody ever chase a pitch out of the zone?
Maybe two or three
guys.
So here's the question for you guys, and we can open up the phones now at 800-636-1067. With these new next-level allegations of the buzzers and the things they're wearing in their shoulder, and don't rip off my jersey because it'll reveal these wires, are you buying or are you selling? Is this just people now looking for stuff, or do you actually think it went this far? And what do you make of Beltran being out and three managers being out of jobs? Teams need managers 27 days from spring training starting. This is seemingly not ending anytime soon for Major League Baseball. 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny.
Right up on that train and just keep moving forward to win.
Josh Reddick of the Astros. He's in the middle of this latest batch of allegations because there's a picture of him sitting on set post winning the league championship series with what appears to be some type of taped device to his inner shoulder, upper left chest. The allegation, according to someone that said they were Carlos Beltran's niece, supposedly not Carlos Beltran's niece, but also the person that said one day before he stepped down that he was going to and has been right on a couple of other things here that they've leaked on Twitter, was that players were using some type of device that was taped to them that would kind of vibrate and let them know what pitch was coming. And so we're asking you, are you buying or are you selling these new allegations at 800-636-1067? I think there's probably some legitimacy to it. I think some of the things you saw yesterday, like, oh, look at this, there's a wire as he runs around this base, or this doesn't look natural, or he's telling people not to rip off his jersey, so obviously that means he was wearing something. He could just not want his jersey ripped off. Like a lot of guys, if you watch them run around third base, they don't want to be punched in the ribs. They don't want to have their gear torn apart. They don't want to be shirtless on the field. Like, there's a lot of reasons for that. So I don't buy all of it, but I am not going to turn my nose up to anything about this Astros team right now. How could you? We know they cheated. Why stop at the trash cans, which is a pretty silly and kind of archaic's the wrong word. Basic, maybe? Like a super basic way to do this. It's very loud.
Yeah.
Right away, we know Danny Farquhar, the pitcher, noticed it in a game.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you try to up your game a little bit and actually not get caught?
I mean, thank goodness for the Nationals. Thank goodness the Washington Nationals beat these bastards. I cannot imagine what I would be doing every day since then if it turned out that the Astros, A, were cheating this badly, and B, had beaten the team that I love.
Aaron's in Fairfax on Grant and Danny. What's up, Aaron? How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing really well, buddy.
All right, so I just want to preface this by saying I grew up a Yankees fan before the Nats came to town. When I was 8 years old, they came to town, so I'm a Yankee and a Nats fan. Love them both. As a Nats fan, thank goodness we beat their cheating butts in the World Series. As a Yankees fan, from the scandal that was just dealt with by the MLB, 2017 I've been vindicated on. But now that 2019 is in question, I'm really pissed. On that Altuve home run, first of all, he's sitting up, he's standing up in the box. He's not in the back of the box, which normally you do when a guy throws 100-plus miles an hour. You don't stand in the front of the box. So something tells me he probably knew a slider was coming. I just think MLB, if they don't look into this, they're obviously trying to protect themselves too much, and it would be a shame.
Appreciate you, buddy. Thank you. There's a picture or a video someone just sent me now. And again, these are all, like, I think they probably get thrown out of court. Is what I would say.
I mean, a threshold for proving these guys guilty in a court of law, none of these circumstantial pictures or gifts or whatever, of course, would prove anybody guilty. But here, in the court of public opinion?
There's a video, though, of Patrick Corbin getting a swinging strikeout of, I think it's Robinson Chirinos, it looks like. Uh-huh. Chirinos, who, by the way, had a huge series. And there's clearly something that, like, flies off of his swing and a miss and maybe hits the catcher in the mask.
Can I see it?
Yeah, and what they're saying is the buzzer, like, flying out of his hand or off the bat. But you can see it hits Yan Gomes, or it looks like that's Yan Gomes.
Yan Gomes hits him here.
In the mask. It's just some kind of, like, metal. There's a reflection, so it looks metallic to me. I can retweet it. But it's just an object. Again, it could be nothing, but what would that be? Like, you're swinging a bat. There's no what is that? Where does that little shiny thing come from?
No, you know, you always have your little piece of metal for good luck.
It's so some people are saying that's his buzzer. I can't tell you that's not. I can roll my eyes and say, I'm not sure, guys. We're looking for things now. But you want to tell me 100% with conviction that that's nothing? Good luck with that. Jeff in D.C., what's up?
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking my call. With regard to the new allegations, I'm definitely a buyer. And one of the main reasons, and I wanted to ask you all for your input on this, is when Strasburg was pitching in Game 6, early on they were hitting him around pretty well. And then there were some comments made about somebody on our pitching staff realized he was, quote, tipping his pitches, and he did started doing something different with his glove. And I'm just wondering, is that in any way a part of this whole scandal? Is that going to come out that somehow we caught on to it and alerted Strasburg to it? Because
after that happened, his pitching
got much better.
It's a good question for folks. This is actually different. So a couple teams around the league, the Diamondbacks most specifically, capitalized on this with Strasburg a couple times this year. He's got something that sometimes, if he's not thinking about it, he falls into where he is tipping his pitches, or he has in the past.
And what that means is there's a tell. So if he's throwing a pitch, he may do something muscle memory mechanically where – it could be as simple, honestly, as where your glove's placed.
Or he flutters his glove getting a changeup grip.
Right.
Or something.
And your hand's in there getting the grip, and so you're kind of moving the ball around. And while you do that, just not thinking about it, staring at home plate, you move your glove a little bit. And players are smart, and this is legal, very much legal. They pick up on these things.
Absolutely.
In fact, a couple series before that against the Rays, the Astros eviscerated a young pitcher who had a really good year who came over from the Pirates. Whose name is escaping me right now, is Tyler Glasnow.
Glasnow
was tipping his pitches, and they saw that. Perfectly legal to pick that up. That's just a competitive advantage. That's on the pitcher, not necessarily on you as a hitter
Absolutely.
For noticing it. Different thing than this. Tony in Fairfax, what's up?
Hey, guys. I just wanted to agree with you in regards to Game 1. I mean, I can't help but think that the Astros knew each and every pitch that Scherzer was throwing. He went through like 100 pitches through like 4 innings. And I just kept on watching that game thinking, what's going on here? Like 1 through 9, nobody swung at anything. And I got to think now that, maybe these guys were using something additional.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it. My buddy Brad just mentioned, he said Springer sat dead red on everything during the postseason run he had. It was one for the ages. And remember the home runs he was hitting?
Yes.
And how far they were traveling? You work back from the result, and you kind of, we're seeing what we want to see, but it all makes more sense. And a lot of people on Twitter are saying, how could you not buy some of this? I'm not saying it's all gospel. I'm not saying everything that you're seeing on Twitter over the last 48 hours is legit. But it's not like this stuff came from nowhere either. You're talking about people claiming to be related to folks who know things. Hey, Carlos Beltran's going to step down tomorrow. I'm related to him. Carlos Beltran stepped down. Oh, by the way, I've got a bunch of information. Here's some of the things.
You call your shot, it happens, you know, 24 hours later, people tend to notice.
He's Danny M. Grant. This is The Fan. A lot of great players left in the NFL Playoffs Championship Sunday coming up. Who's going to be the X factor in each game? We'll go non-stars who could win their team's chance to get to the Super Bowl almost single-handedly this weekend. We'll do it next on GMA.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.